We've asked the blessing already at the end of services, so we'll go ahead and get the study started. So if you have input to make, you're welcome to do so. And hopefully we can have a lively discussion. So I sent out a copy of the some questions, and Bob Radcliffe sent me the questions, and so this is just the first part of them, and they seem to be interesting, and I tried to adapt them to our context, which is being Christians, and we're not just it's not just a worldly deal. So anyway, the first question is based upon a quote from the book of Live Not by Lies, which is a quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and he says, "There is always this fallacious belief it would not be the same here. Such things are impossible. Alas, all the evil of the 20th century is possible everywhere on earth." So do you believe this quote to be true? If so, why? Don't raise your hands at once. So, Rich has, okay, Bob.
Thank you. Well, yes, it is true. For example, they I'm sure they thought the exact same thing during the Roman Empire when they ruled the world. Scripturally, you can look at 2 Peter 3:4, where they say things will always continue as they always have been. The people just they don't believe that that anything would change or anything would be different.
Any other comments? Paul cited, go ahead, Rich.
Oh, there we go, good. Okay. Well, absolutely, this is true. There's one thing that's constant, God's nature and human nature. Human nature doesn't change over the recorded time of history we've had. And so this is going to happen and continue to happen until Christ returns. And part of the problem, of course, is the lust for power. People want to manipulate the masses to get that power. And I think this lie, like Mr. Solzhenitsyn has quoted, is true, because they do that. And this, as he uses the word fallacious, which means deceitful, it's my understanding of it anyways. The culmination of the days of Noah are going to happen, and there's going to be a whirlwind events that are going to occur, as we know, and it will be decimating. So the history of mankind proves, like Bob was saying, civilizations over and over again repeat the history of failure. And then with the passage of time, we're going to lose our freedoms. That's just going to be the way it is, because it follows along this dictum of...
So why do you think we're going to lose our freedom?
Well, I think we're going to lose our freedoms is because people are going to believe in something that is a lie. And if we don't accept that lie, then we will not be allowed to have the opportunities to be able to develop ourselves, like you mentioned last week. Perhaps, we get pressured on our job. Maybe we get pressured if you're in a school environment. You won't be able to make the choices you could make when someone pressures you to accept a lie in order to advance. And final thing I was going to comment on, I think there's going to be barriers of this freedom to believe in God's ways, because when the Hollywood lifestyle, the life and the dress and the comments that people make on the tube or in the media are generally accepted by everybody, and then whatever they feel is good and we oppose it because we know it's evil, then we're going to lose freedom.
Okay. All right. David, up front here.
I believe this is a true statement, because Satan's still the author of lies, and he's in control of this world right now. And so and he hates God's people. He's jealous of God's people because he sees them having an opportunity that he's already given up. So, yeah, I believe that until Christ returned, that this statement will be true.
Yeah, there was a quote of Peter. You can also, I happen to be looking at the Bible writing program this morning, and the scripture was Ecclesiastes 1. And it was interesting what they said there. They said that Solomon was inspired to write, he said, that which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Like he said, if they persecuted people in the past, nothing new. They're going to do it at some time in the future, and that's a sure thing. And it's interesting as you look at the development of Germany before World War II in the 1930s. They were the most educated people in Europe. I mean, so it's not a matter of education. They were smart. They were educated, and amazingly, they went for it hook, line, and sinker. And so we're, people in our country are well educated, and it's scary what can come on the horizon. You got to realize that what's been in the past can come about in the future. Now, will it be exactly the same? No, but you'll be able to see, okay, I know where this is coming from and where this is going. That's why the people that this guy talked to in the book, they could see it's coming again. They could see it. So let's move on to another question. Just before we move on, is Christianity being persecuted here in 2020, in November 2020? Yes.
Yes, it is.
Hold on a second.
Yes, it is. And I think that we tend to kind of have an ethnocentric view of it. But around the world, Christians are being persecuted and tortured and crucified and burned to death. And my job doesn't give me a problem about my beliefs. But one of my friends who has the same beliefs wasn't allowed to take off for the feast and only took the holy days, because even though we work for the same school district, her principal wouldn't let her off. So we're starting to see it, but we need to not look at it that it's going to happen to me, and that's when Christ will return. We have to understand it's happening all around the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just people in the Church of God that are being persecuted. If you're Christian in some parts of the world, you're being persecuted today. For instance, most of the people in the book that Live Not by Lies, they're either Catholics or Baptist. Bill gets his chance first.
Oh, there was a incident about a church that had outdoor meetings, and they did not have masks, so they were arrested.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's the same one. These guys were outdoor singing in Utah, and they sent the police out and they arrested this one guy, and the guy said, really? You're going to do this? And they did. They hauled him away. So some of that may have been a personal vendetta with the mayor, but anyway, that's the world we live in. Go ahead, Michelle.
I think that when we look at Christianity as the boiled down to, have you accepted Jesus Christ as your Savior? And we realize that not everybody has the same understanding and the same knowledge, so we're all on a different part of the path. There are people in this world who know they're going to be crucified and they will not give up Jesus. So how does that compare to those of us who've never really been persecuted? I don't know. I mean, I hope I won't ever do it, but I haven't been asked for that yet.
Well, I think people, we'll quote this later, talks about people not being persecuted unto death. And, we've not spilled blood or any of that. We may not have gone through those ordeals like that, but many of us have had to stand up for the faith because they wanted us to work or you can't go to the feast. And we've had to say, well, I've got to do this. And then it comes down to, are they going to cave or are we going to follow through on what we believe? And that's the test. Yes?
Hi. Yeah, I believe there are people being persecuted in November 2020, not just around the world, but even in the U.S. You have soft persecution, and you have what you call hard persecution. So where, you know, you don't allow someone to express their religion, right, or to, you know, go for the feast, or to, you know, you don't give them work, or, you know, you don't pay them well, or, you know, there are things like that, right? That's soft persecution. Then there's, you know, death and burial and, you know, like killing the Christians around the world. I know in the Middle East, and not just there, but even in like in Africa and in, you know, South America, I've heard of many stories of people being killed and, you know, their houses being burnt, and like in India and, you know, in other places too around the world. So there is persecution going on around the world, not just in Africa or in Europe or, you know, far away, but also here too, right here in the U.S. and, you know, in Canada, in Mexico, everywhere. So it's going on.
Yeah, yes, it is. It may not be killing people, but people are being persecuted. The next question is this. The task of the Christian dissident, the book says, this is a quote from the book, the task of the Christian dissident today is to personally commit to live not by lies. And then the question that follows is, name some lies that we are expected to affirm in our own lives, at work, at school, in your church or community, in your family. Have you guys, anybody been at work and they've expected you to accept a belief or a practice that you know is not true?
I was about to answer it before you put the rest of that question there. But anyway, I haven't personally been persecuted at work for religious beliefs, but I've had to just abstain from the conversations, which was pretty easy to do. But generally speaking, you know, we're confronted every day with those basic lies that you described in your sermon today. Those are all around us at school and, you know, at work, and our government institutions, all based on those lies. And so, you know, as a consequence, we all suffer because we can't, you know, we can't, or we are, they attempt to limit us as to, you know, live by what we believe with all those distractions and forces against us that are contrary to God's truths. So just in a general way, just all those things that you were talking about this in the sermon today, we all are affected by those every day.
So anybody personally experience any of this? Rich?
Yes, when I first started with Boeing, when I was about 25 years old, or no, I'm sorry, 30 years old, 72 now, boy, time just flies by, doesn't it? Anyways, I started a job, and it so happened that my supervisor was a person that was from the Church of Christ. And he found out I kept the Sabbath because he asked me to go to work one night on a night shift for 2 weeks solid. And that meant working through the Sabbath. And I told him I couldn't. And he turned around to me and he says, "You got to learn something here. Boeing owns you." And I thought to myself, just a new, you know, young person, this is not something that is a minor threat. This is a major threat, because I had moved to another city. I had no family around, except in the church, of course. But still, I had to stand my ground. And I worked Wednesday night and Thursday night. And then when he came in the morning, Friday morning, I said, "You're going to have to find somebody else." And he said, "You need to go talk to our manager." So I went and talked to the manager, and he told me, he said, "You know, this is a job that you need to do, and I don't think you can be able to work in this department if you're not available." And so I went to the equal opportunity employer and talked to him about it. He said, "We'll look into it and see if we can help you out. I can't promise you anything." Well, that wasn't very, you know, encouraging at that point in time. And I don't want to drag this out, but the bottom line is, God worked it out so that I was able to transfer out of that department within 30 days. But that was a very uncomfortable feeling, especially with, you know, go home and you look at your children and you say, "How am I going to be able to provide if I get laid off?"
Anybody else?
I had the thing about evolution in college, and I had a very interesting professor who said, "I am not going to debate evolution. I don't believe evolution, and most scientists don't actually believe it. I don't care what you believe. Learn how to put the right answer on the test. And that was the end of it. That was the end of that. But I also had a principal in my third year or fourth year of teaching who said, we need to negotiate about these holy days. And I told her, well, you know, God doesn't negotiate about these things. And she said, if you go, I will fire you. And I said, I think you need to call HR. And HR told her that she was not allowed to do that. And she actually told me, well, they said I can't fire you, but I will find a way to get rid of you by the end of the year, no matter what it takes.
You have to deal with those kinds of things, and I think that it's going to increase as something we have to deal with. Steve?
So I had an experience recently that taught me about the way this soft totalitarianism creeps in. I took a test for a certification, and on the test was actually a question about transgender identity. I don't know how it found its way into a test like this, but it was on there. And I had three options. I knew the answer that they were wanting that would be technically the correct answer. I could give that. I could not answer the question, or I could choose the option that I knew was the truth, but it would be the wrong answer, and therefore I would be penalized on the test. You know, I'm curious what folks would do in a situation like that. I know what I did.
I just wanted to add that story. There was a good friend of mine. He was a software engineer, and he was confronted with the same question. Now, he wasn't in the church, but he did, of course, believe in Jesus Christ. He was a big, you know, guy. And he told them no, a little more emphatically than just that. They fired him.
So did you pass the test?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
Wait for this. Evaluating the results. They're not grading. They're evaluating the results. I'll find out later this month.
Yeah. I would say, do you conform or not? I would say,
yeah,
probably. And that's the challenge that we face. And it's a scary prospect, because you can be canceled in this time, and if you're canceled, you may not get another job.
Right.
You may not get a job in that field, because they're going to make sure that this view that you have follows along with you. And so it's something that we all have to deal with as we move forward in time. Okay? Yes.
In 1961, I was working for the FAA in Galveston, Texas. There were three of us on the job, and we had every third week we had 7 day on call. Hurricane Carla came through. I had worked that out with another guy. He took Saturday, and I took Sunday. It was working just wonderful. Hurricane Carla came through and wiped out the airport. The FAA put on two 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week. It was just before Trumpets and Atonement, and I told him I was going, and I did. When I got back, the federal government fired me. Now, I appealed all the way to the President of the United States, to his Department on Fair Employment Practices, out, okay? Now, I have made 10 times the money the government ever made would have paid me, and I've never had a problem with Holy Day since.
Good for you. Good for you. So that's something we have to think about. Okay, what happens if we are challenged in this way? Are we going to hold to the truth or not? Yes, in the back.
I had an experience with my husband in 1974. We were struggling financially. He was a cook, and I was a waitress at a Sambo's restaurant. We were in Longview, so we weren't far from, you know, main headquarters of the church at the time. And a regional manager came in and spoke to all the employees, and he saw that I didn't ever work on the Sabbath. So he had a problem with that, and so he just verbally assaulted me about it, even though I had okayed with the regular manager to be off on the Sabbath. And so I got upset, and I said I quit. My husband got upset. He said he quit. And then we both get home, and he calls us on the phone. He says he's going to come over and kill us.
Oh, really? Oh, my.
Yep. So it was a pretty scary experience. He didn't come, but we figure he must have lost part of his family to the church.
Hmm. That's an extreme I've not, we don't want to experience. And so anyway, we see these things that are happening. I mean, we have to realize that at this point, we have the freedom to preach the truths of the Bible. But is that going to last? If we lived in Canada, you would have to be very careful about that. I don't think that they record services. And so there are no tapes of services or MP3s. There's none of that. Because all of that can be traced back to you and you can suffer the consequences. So the church has just taken a, okay, what we don't record, you've limited the evidence, and you therefore can preach the truth. But we still, thankfully, can speak the truth, but the question is, who's out there listening? That's the thing. I don't know everybody that's listening, and basically it's the door's open for anybody that wants to listen. But you can have blowback as a result of that. So you try to be careful what you say, but that is a reality that we have to realize. You're true. Well, at least we don't have an Alexa here. We'd really be in trouble then. But anyway. Really? I've not had that happen. That sounds kind of creepy, but anyway. Oh, okay, so it's taken over. So, but those are things that we have to keep in mind, and not only in our personal lives and our life in the church. So next question is this, that people that grew up in communism and experienced it, they see that people in our country are almost completely unaware of what's going on and the seriousness of the situation that we're dealing with. And they don't see the dangers that are going on. Why don't you think people see the dangers? Faith?
It's long though. Can I read a quote?
You can.
Okay.
As long as we agree with it, it's
all
okay.
Right. So I'm going to read it first, and then I'll tell you what. So long as they continued to work and breed, their other activities were without importance. Left to themselves, like cattle turned loose upon the plains of Argentina, they had reverted to a style of life that appeared to be natural to them, a sort of ancestral pattern. Heavy physical work, the care of home and children, petty quarrels with neighbors, films, football, beer, and above all, gambling, filled up the horizon of their minds. To keep them in control was not difficult. So I say entertainment, the daily grind, sports, politics, as long as we stay distracted, we are doing exactly what the ominous they want us to do, in the quotes from 1984.
And it's easy to be, there are lots of distractions, lots of things we can spend our time on. And I know somebody gave a sermonette on distractions at the feast in New Braunfels. In New Braunfels, and you know they understood about distractions, and we all face them, and we can be distracted and focused on a lot of other stuff, and we need to be focused on what's really most important. Any other thoughts?
So this is a really important scripture at this point in time. 2 Corinthians 2:11, it says that we should not be ignorant of Satan's devices. So people are ignorant of Satan's devices. And a long time ago, probably about 15 years ago, a minister in God's church recommended this book right here. And I'm just going to tell you a little bit about it because I really encourage you to see it, because it'll help us to be more aware of what has been going on in the last 20 years. I mean, we all basically know the basic concepts, but let me just read this a little bit. The Marketing of Evil. I don't know how many of you have read this book. It's well written. and it's written by David Kupalian. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. It says, how radical, elitist, and pseudo-experts sell us corruption disguised as freedom. Now, just real briefly here, I think the titles of the chapters will pique everyone's interest here. Marketing Blitz, chapter one, selling gay rights in America. Two, buying the big lie, the myth of the church-state separation. Number three, killer culture. Well, who's selling sex and rebellion to your children? Number four, which I've experienced, we all have this, but at work it was just multicultural madness, how Western culture was turned upside down in one generation. Number five, which is one of the BLM tenets, by the way, family meltdown, the campaign to destroy marriage. Number six, obsessed with sex, how fraudulent science unleashed a catastrophic revolution. Three more, sabotaging our schools, how radicals have hijacked America's education system. Number eight, the media matrix, how the press created a world of illusion we think is real. And nine, blood confessions, how lying marketers sold America on unrestricted abortion. And it goes step by step, how it started, who's behind it in regards to people. Of course, we know Satan is the prince of power of this world, but what people have done subtly, like Satan behind the scenes, to get to where we're at right now. The Marketing of Evil, again, by David Kupalian.
So, I mean, it's a, you've got these things that you have to be aware of, and, you know, if you want to be kind of shocked, what was the name of that Netflix film about? The Social Dilemma. If you have Netflix, take a look at that. It's less stressful than Dr. Baker's presentation, but it still talks about what's going on, and the people that are telling you what's going on worked for all the mainstream media companies, and they lay out what they've done, and it is well done, but pretty scary. You can like something on Facebook. Well, that was just not to be a big deal. But what's happened is if they found a way to use that against you. So it gives them information about what you like, and then they can send you information about products and all of that kind of thing. And they know what you like, and they know what you don't like. And yes, Liz?
Oh, sorry. The person that created it's not only about products, but the person that created said, oh, you know, I wanted it to be positive and everything, but people, it's destroying kids. They're using it against, I have this many friends or I have this many likes. So it's also used socially against kids and high, you know, and or young adults and everything along with products. And as a side too, my parents were born, both of them were born in Russia. So I grew up with parents that experienced and lived communism. And my mother would tell me stories. She told me she was a girl when she remembered when the communists came and took their last cow. And it was just terrible. And I had all these stories. And my parents lived through, I wouldn't be here, they survived Stalin's famine. They lived in the Ukraine. So I grew up with parents that did not want to, they were so glad, they did not want to go back to Russia and live how, and my dad would tell stories, it's just every day you live to try to survive and get food and everything. So they're dead, but they wouldn't be for what's going on.
Yeah, they, you know, most, they lived through it, so it most definitely impacted them and their view of the world. You would say, man, they're negative. And then you look at what they went through and you think, man, they're pretty positive after all going through all that. So, but that's the world we live in, unfortunately. And people, I think, that sometimes don't see what's coming because sometimes people are willfully blind. They don't want to see it. So they just turn a blind eye and don't pay any attention. You have other people that are afraid, so they're not going to say anything. And then you have people that are things are comfortable, everything's going okay for me, I'm not going to rock the boat. Those are all different, that's not the whole list, but those are all things, vantage points we can take. Hey, I'm not going to create a problem here. And, you know, we have to be careful in how we deal with things, and we don't want to, you know, compromise in any way. And it's hard. I mean, if you face one of these situations, you think long and hard about it, or at least I do. Should I do this? What's the right thing to do here? And it's not just, oh yeah, I'm not gonna cave into that. And maybe I'm weak, but I do think about, okay, what's the right thing to do here? And you know, so you pray about it, you fast about it, you study about it, and ask God to guide you in making a good decision. And if you do follow that path, God will strengthen you and help you through it. I know I was not persecuted in any way, but when I was working in business, I had a situation come up where I was in charge of several nursing homes in Ohio. And I was going to the feast at Squaw Valley in California. So it was my responsibility to make sure everything went okay with these nursing homes, and the nursing homes were going to go on strike while we were at the feast. And I thought, man, could there be worse timing? So I'd wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning thinking about this and worried about this. And so, you know, I went through the Psalms and prayed about it and stewed over it and all of that. And eventually I reached a point where I determined I need to go to the feast. I made a commitment to go there. I'm going to go to the feast. So I made that decision. And the interesting thing that happened, I didn't know what's going to happen. I thought, basically, I told the guys that worked for me, I said, you guys are going to have to handle this because I'm going to be gone. So, you know, I stewed about it. And being me, I wanted to be in control. That meant being there, okay? And I realized that I could go to the feast. I forget where it was, in Canada. We could go to the feast in Canada, and then I could drive down to the nursing homes every day, all right? So I figured, you know, human reasoning. So anyway, I realized, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go to the feast where I designated early on. And you know what? Once I made that decision, they decided not to strike. Okay? I had no idea they weren't going to. But all I could see that as is God's intervention. So you can't see how God might intervene. Now, he might not. And maybe in your case, that's the best thing for you. But God can intervene in ways you don't even consider. And I didn't consider that. They'd call off the strike. But that's what they did. I was most thankful for it and had a nice feast in Squaw Valley. So anyway, I mean, and we have to realize that's how God is. And as we take matters to God and we ask God for God's intervention, God has the might and the power to intervene in ways we can't even understand. So, and you are precious to him, so he does care, and he will watch over you. And that's why being faithful is well worth it. And, you know, so let's say, how many of you have thought, as you've come along in the church, if I do what's right, I do what's pleasing to God, then I'm not going to have problems? How many of you thought that? I did. You know, if I'm following God, it's all going to be good. Isn't that how it's supposed to work? I'm doing my part, you do your part, and it all works out. But is that how it works? No. Rich?
I agree with you. When I first came in the church, that's what I thought. Then over time, I thought, maybe I better change my way of thinking about this.
Yeah, well, yes. Well, I think you're corrected pretty fast if you have that. You're thinking that way. And I know that when I was going through the Beatitudes and covering those, it kind of shocked me to see what it says in Matthew chapter 5 about this subject. Look at Matthew chapter 5 and look at verses 10 through 12. It says here in Matthew chapter 5, verse 10, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake." Wait a minute. I think we're supposed to be blessed for righteousness' sake. Isn't that right? And blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Those are the people who are going to be in God's kingdom. And and Jesus Christ is the perfect example of a person who was persecuted. So he was faithful, and he was definitely persecuted for righteousness' sake because he never sinned. So he did the right thing, said the right thing. He was always faithful, and yet, he was persecuted. It says, "Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake." He says, "Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." So that's all encouraging in a way, but it still means this is not going to be an easy road to travel, if that's the road we travel. And that's the challenge we all face. Will we live God's way even when persecution comes our way? That's what we have to do. We cannot let anybody undermine our faith. Or they can attack us, but we're going to do what's right, and we're not going to give in. And we have to come to that mindset in the here and now, and decide we're going to stick to our guns. So how do we prepare for persecution? How do we prepare for it? Yes.
We prepare for it by having a close relationship with God, to stay in contact with Him all the time through prayer, and to live by His commandments and His truths and principles, faithfully, and so that when we're challenged, we'll have that basic closeness to God, with His Holy Spirit, to be able to withstand whatever comes, knowing the truths and knowing that you know the truths, and not letting anything, get in the way of that.
Yeah, I mean, let's say, I talked about Genesis. If your kids take that position, those aren't going to be popular positions in 21st century America. So, you got to, this is right. This is the way to go. You try to help them see, okay, what's the best way to handle this? It's like I remember my kids, they knew that the holidays were wrong. And I think that, they said the people that kept them were pagans. And I mean, I remember my wife describing they were sitting in, I think they were in the line at the grocery store. And I think it was my daughter who was there. And somebody said, "What are you going to get for Christmas?" So being a young child, what does she say? "We don't keep Christmas." "Oh, really?" And I think she may have said something about pagans. So anyway, it's pagan. And you're like, you're there as an adult. Oh, you shouldn't have said that. But anyway, we don't keep it. So, they're just a child. They're innocent. But they were, they knew what what they had been taught. And so it's pagan. And you're like, oh. You just had to stop at, "We don't keep Christmas," but and then they just look at you, "Oh, you poor child, your parents are abusing you," and all this. So anyway, any of you had a comment there?
So at teen camps, one of the things that they oftentimes emphasize is you decide beforehand what your response is going to be. So when you're faced with a decision of, are you going to sin or not, you've decided beforehand what your action is going to be. So when you are actually faced with the situation, you're not making a decision. You're just following through with a decision that you already made.
So if I face this situation, I already know what my decision is. Michelle?
I think that we have to be spiritually ready, and as you said, we have to have a response already formulated and maybe have practiced that. But I think too, as time goes by, we need to start getting even our finances in order. I know that if certain things happen, I'll have to retire early because I can't go along with what's happening in my job. I'll have to stop. Well, it's all well and good. Okay, I promise you, God always provides. I've never lived under a bridge, but I could spend myself into living under a bridge, so I have to be careful. And I know that, okay, my parents were baptized in 1962, maybe 1963, and I knew a lot of people who lost their job because they kept the holy days over and over again. And God always provided another job. So I have that in the back of my head, so I know that He always provides. But I also know that that job can go away from you in 12 hours because you are keeping the holy days or because you keep the Sabbath. So it's a spiritual thing, but we also need to prepare to be able to still follow God if some of our physical things disappear.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle. Anybody else? Bob? Okay.
Okay. To prepare for persecution, what you need to do is to, you know, stay prayed up, right? You know, we need to pray to the God of heaven for wisdom, strength, and courage to endure persecution. I believe persecution is coming soon to a city near us. Around the world, it's already happening, you know, with ISIS and, other... even like with the Buddhists and the Hindus and like other religions persecuting Christians already. But in here, you know, I would not be, I mean, in the not too distant future, you know, they might round up the Christians and, you know, start killing them or something. It is possible. But if we stay prayed up and, you know, I think as Mrs. Michelle said, you know, if you keep reading the scriptures and if you consider it to be a spiritual thing, you know, we would be prepared. But also, there are some things where, you know, like if we end up appearing before kings or before presidents or before people, you know, we can pray about it. And, you know, if we have the Spirit of God in us, then we should be able to have a great response towards that man or woman or whoever it is, you know, at that time.
Okay. Bob?
I was going to say that Christ told us that don't be surprised when you see these things coming, when you see them approaching. I don't think that necessarily means we're just supposed to sit here and wait for it to happen. Paramount, of course, is what Fred said. We've got to get closer to God and Christ. But one of the things that was pointed out in the book was that as they were no longer allowed to meet in a group of 100 people, they ended up having to meet in smaller size groups where they could still have that contact, where they could bolster one another and build each other up so they wouldn't be lonely, they wouldn't feel isolated. They said isolation was a killer. So one of the things we could do ahead of time is start looking at, okay, how could we form these small groups? We're spread all over town. Who would that be? What would that look like? Maintain some kind of a contact list that we know how to contact the right folks at the right time and so forth. So, I mean, I think there is some preparation that we could do in that regard.
True.
In the book of Revelations, we read a lot where Christ admonishes us to overcome. And King David, of course, was close to God. And one of his psalms that I've read, it's really tough. But it goes like this. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou from me from secret faults. That's in Psalm 19:12. Well, that's part of overcoming. And coming before God, I mean, if your child came before you and said, help me to overcome myself, you would really have an affection for that child, and help me to be like you, that is. And I think that's another way to draw closer to God as we get closer to the end time. Let's look at our faults. You don't have to tell everybody about them, but God knows, and ask God to help to remove those faults.
Okay. So when you think about... Yes, go ahead.
So when I read the question, my mind went to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and the last part of verse 10, Paul writes, "But we urge you, brethren, that you increase more and more, that you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands, so as we commanded you, that you may walk properly toward those who are outside, and that you may lack nothing." I think that's what it's coming to. Sort of like Bob was talking about. We're going to have to live a quiet life of community with one another.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's something that we should pray for. That's where when it talks about praying for kings and all of that, you may not like the king, but you can pray that God would bless you with government that is going to be allow you to be able to meet in peace, to be able to practice the true religion, because you know, not every ruler is going to allow that, but God can affect their decisions, which can impact all of us. Consider one of the, and Bob alluded to this in his response, and it talked about for the people living in the communist countries, one way they got through it was with small cells of people who would get together and interact, and that gave them the strength and encouragement to get through with it, and my question, and yes, we can break up into smaller cells, but you have to realize you do have a cell right here, right now. This is a cell, and it's a cell from which we can be resistant to whatever's coming, and it's something that we want to. That's where we are to be, you know, grow closer together and work together and encourage each other and pray for each other and all of those kinds of things, because it's going to be essential in the future. And in thinking of that, I thought of Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10, which talks about this very subject. And as you look at the Apostle Paul, it's interesting what he had to say to the Ephesian church, the Ephesian elders, when he was going to see them for the last time. Basically, this is it. So he told them, "You guys are going to be ravaged by wolves. You're going to have people rising up in your midst who are going to be preaching heresy." And the thing is, these are people you've been going to church with, and they're going to espouse these other ideas. They're going to be the ones that rat you out. Now, I'm not accusing anybody. I'm just saying Paul pointed out this is right here in your midst. So, you know, we got to know what we believe, and we got to believe it not because of our friends, but because we truly believe it. And it's interesting what Paul says. He says in Hebrews 10, verse 19, he says, "Therefore, brethren, having boldness to enter the holiest by the blood of Jesus." And we all have that option because we are Christians. We can go before the throne of God by a new and living way, which he consecrated for us. That is, Jesus consecrated that way for us through the veil, that is his flesh. So through Christ, we have access to the throne of God. That's always available. And having a high priest over the house of God, who is Jesus Christ, and he's opened the way for us, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Verse 23, let us hold fast. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. So he gives us all that encouraging and what's available to us. And then he says in verse 24, and let us consider one another. So if you're not in one of these cells, you have nobody, that you're out there all by yourself. He doesn't say you're the Lone Ranger. He said, consider one another, because you're part of a group. You're part of people who pray for you, think about you, are going to help you if you're in need. That's what we are, to be such a group. And he says, let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works. All right, think about that. And, you know, I kind of stumbled onto this scripture years ago, and it's always resonated with me. Okay, if I never go to church, how do I stir people up with love and good works? You can't do it. They don't even know who you are. So you need to know other people in the group, and the other people know you're in the group, and you pray for one another, and you help each other. But if you don't come to church and you don't know anybody in the group, what happens when it all goes crazy? Then you're on your own. So God said, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together, but stir each other up to love and good works. You have to be there to do that. You can't be on Zoom. Zoom works in a pinch, but Zoom is not what it's talking about here. And he goes on to say, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together. Isn't the Sabbath an assembly? Why would you forsake that? Why would you fail to go? This is your shot. It's going to get bad, and I'm just saying, as we have a relationship with one another, then we have people who will help us. They'll pray for us. They'll encourage us. They'll give us a phone call. They'll write us a note, and they will help us to stand up. So it says, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some. And obviously some people didn't care. They didn't come to church. Why come to church? He's not that good of a speaker. You know, I can get on Zoom or get on the internet and hear as good a speaker as that guy. Why am I going to go to church? You know, it may not be about the great sermon you hear. It may be about the relationships that we develop. And we have to have the bigger vision. And it says, but exhorting one another. So how do you exhort one another from afar? The ideal way to exhort one another is in person. No, if we can't do any better, we phone them. You can even get on Zoom and talk to somebody. But we make the best use of what's available for us. It says, and we exhort one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. So they're being told that a day is approaching. And they were a long way from our time. But we're a lot closer to that day approaching, and we need to take to heart the things that we are encouraged to do. So I think that, you know, as we think about being in the church, and, you know, one of the things that the book goes on to talk about that's interesting is, you know, these people were courageous, and they kept the faith, and they suffered persecution, they suffered prison, beatings, all sorts of terrible things. But you know what? One of the statements that was made was, we were all afraid. We were all afraid. They weren't just these bold, tough people that were going to get through it all. They said, we're afraid. And they said, you better be afraid, because you're dealing with people that have no qualms about making your life miserable. And you know, I don't want to suffer. None of us do. And we are afraid, but one of the things that happens as you're part of a group and you see people in that group stand up for what's right, you know what happens? It's a lot easier to do it with somebody else than by yourself. So if somebody else stands up, then it makes it easier for you. And I remember back to 1995 when things were falling apart. And people were being fired. Okay, these people are being fired because they did not accept what the church was teaching. So, do you accept this? Are you going to teach this? No. Adios. So people that I knew to be faithful men and women were being let go. And you know, their going through that encouraged me. And I remember in Portsmouth, you had all the deacons and the elders stood up for it, and the brethren stood up for it. But they weren't going to do that if the deacons and elders folded. So if your leadership folds, that's hard to get through. So you need people that are faithful, not just leaders in the congregation, but people who are faithful. They're willing to suffer persecution. It's easier for you to stand up. Well, so-and-so did it. I can do it too. So I know there was a brother and sister, their father, I believe it had been executed. And somehow or other, the father stood up, and so they came after him. And so they're going to come and get the brother and sister. So anyway, they came and got him, hauled him off, and put him in a truck of some kind, and they're hauling him away. And as they're being hauled away, the brother and sister saw all these other similar trucks going down the road, and they said, the statement that they made to each other was, we're not alone. And whatever was going to happen at the end of the road there wasn't going to be good, but they said, we're not alone. They could see there were other people, and it did give them some strength to go through what lay ahead. And that's what we can do for each other, is we understand the faith and we determine we're going to keep the faith. If the persecution, whatever it is, comes, that as we see somebody else stand up, it encourages us, doesn't it? So that's one way you stir others to love and good works, you know, to help them keep the faith. So any other questions or comments? Yes, Liz.
Now that I'm really depressed. recently we gave out a list of the people, and sometimes it surprises me that even as small as we are, people don't know, especially the new ones, you know, that have come. If you look around, I mean, Rose got married, so Scott, and then, you know, you have Bats come, Laura's new. So I just want to really encourage people to, when you see somebody different, to go up and meet them, or look at your list and say, you know, Lauren Baird just moved here a couple of months ago, and just make, of course, most people know the Palmer, you know, Angela and Steve, they've come here quite a few times. They're new to our congregation, but not, you know, most people have known them. But I'm just saying, look at your list, and if there's a name that you don't know, at least go and say hello, you know? So,
well, become familiar with the people. It's like today we had a mother and her daughter here. They're visiting, and they normally go to Living, and to make them feel welcome, and notice those things, and try to go up and say hi, and welcome them to church services. And as we do that, it's a way that we help people. I mean, they've come here and they're judging us. You know, is this a friendly group? You know, sadly, I've been to church in places where nobody said hi. Okay? Nobody. I think one person said hi because they knew my wife. But other than that was it. And you're like, wait a minute, this is a church of God. But we've experienced that a few times. And it's not because we're special or something like that, but just that should be just a normal thing that takes place in the church of God. And a kindness and a consideration to see people and to go up and say hi. You know, you may be shy. Okay, you can go up and say hi. You know, I didn't want to go. You know, when I came in the church, I didn't want to go up and say hi to anybody. You know, and then I remember saying, how do I relate to all these old people? So then I started working in nursing homes, and I saw old people every day. So I learned to have a change of view. But I think we can all do a lot of good by just being friendly and thoughtful and caring for one another. And you've got people that life right now is a struggle. So think about them. You know, the Huttos, the Desi Long, you know, they're facing situations that aren't likely to change. So anyway, we can give them encouragement and support. So thank you all for your attention. Thank you all for your input. Thanks to Steve and Steve for handling the mics. And please have a safe journey home. And we'll see you next week.